Hello, welcome to the Crisis Point Podcast. I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before I get started on this, the last podcast of 2021, assuming there's not some big news that breaks, if you know Pope Francis passes away or something like that this week, I don't plan on having more podcasts this year. But before we get started on that, I just remind people to like and subscribe wherever you might watch or listen to this podcast. We're on a lot of different places now. We're streaming on YouTube, on Odyssey, Facebook, Twitter, and Float. Although I think the Float isn't working. I'm not 100% sure about that. I got to work on that one. But definitely on YouTube, Odyssey, Facebook, and Twitter. So you can always watch us there. And of course, you can't listen to us live on the podcast, but you can listen to it later. So make sure you subscribe to our channel on your podcast feed as well. Okay, so let's get started. First of all, I just titled this The Year in Review. I wanted to talk about what happened this year, and particularly what I wanted to focus on a little bit was Crisis Magazine, what we did, what were our most popular articles. I find people are always interested in that. You don't really get to know the inside sometimes story of what's going on and what articles are really popular. So I wanted to share that with you in this podcast as we review the year. First, I just want to mention some of the big news stories of the year, like four or five of them. It's interesting. I started as editor of Crisis Magazine on January 4th, 2021. And 2 days later was January 6th, 2021. So big news story just to get me started, at Crisis. And my honest opinion of January 6th is that it is full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. I really just don't, I have a hard time accepting the idea that January 6th is some big deal. I know there are liberals who act like it was the end of the Republic. They act like it was an insurrection on the level of the Russian Revolution. But to me, it just wasn't that big a deal. I mean, it was stupid. It was mostly just a completely valid and no problem rally that likely they people can have, because that's kind of what our country is about, is being able to do stuff like that. But the break, going into the Capitol, I think there's a lot of questions about that, how they were allowed in and everything. But ultimately, nothing happened. I mean, yes, I do know a couple of people died, and that's always tragic, but people die every day in various things. And I just felt like it wasn't an insurrection. It was almost like a college prank. You have the guy in the Viking outfit on the Capitol and things like that, but it wasn't a big deal. But it was a huge news story. So I think that was one of the big news stories, because I do think it's impacted the country in a lot of ways. Second news story, of course, it's going in kind of chronological order, there is Biden. Biden becoming president, being inaugurated as president. And particularly for Crisis readers, I know one of the big deals about that is the fact that he proclaims to be Catholic. He goes to Mass regularly and he receives communion. And we've had a number of articles on this. One of them actually made our top 10, but we've had a number of articles on this issue. And honestly, the bishops, we've seen this multiple times. They just punted on this issue. They decide, no, we're not going to deal with this. We're going to allow pro-abortion politicians to receive communion without any problem. And in fact, if a priest thinks about not doing that, we're going to punish him instead of the person receiving communion unworthily. So that's a big issue. That's a big story. Of course, Biden being president just in general is a big story. But I think from a Catholic perspective, having somebody who is 100% pro-abortion, never saw an abortion he didn't love, and proclaims to be Catholic as the president is, of course, scandalous, because nothing's being done. We actually just ran an article, was it today? I think it was today or yesterday, at Crisis about St. Ignatius of Constantinople, a somewhat unknown saint. He was a patriarch of Constantinople in the 9th century, I think it was, and he stood up to the emperor. And he did not allow the emperor to receive communion because he was not living as a Catholic. And so he's an example for us. And so I think that's another big story. Of course, one of the big stories has to be the COVID, the whole COVID issue. Not that COVID itself, I mean, obviously as a virus, it has caused a lot of harm, A lot of people have gotten it. At this point, I think almost most of us have gotten it. Some people have died from it. And I think there's some arguments to be made that a lot of those people didn't have to die if there had been more focus on treatment beforehand. I listened to the podcast. What's the guy's name? Dr. Peter McCullough, I think it is, on Joe Rogan. And he makes a convincing argument in my mind. I'm not a medical doctor, and it's like you're competing doctors here. But he makes a convincing argument in my mind that a lot of the deaths that came with people with COVID that actually were due to COVID could have been prevented if we had done more. Instead of just focus solely on a vaccine, we'd focus more on treatment of people when they first have symptoms. And so that's a big story, though. The story with COVID, though, isn't the virus as much as the response to the virus. The lockdowns, the mask mandates, the now vaccine mandates, the pushing the vaccine, all of this has become the most important thing in our world today, and it's dominating everything. We ran an article about a week ago saying that by somebody who just said kind of COVID is over. And we had a number of people who were upset about this because they're like, well, people are still dying from it. I know people are still dying from it. However, I would say COVID as an event should be over, meaning that those who having it control every aspect of our lives, that needs to be done with. It needs to be treated like the flu or something, another, just something that happens in our society. People get sick and die from it. You take reasonable measures and things of that nature, but you don't end the world as we know it because of this virus. But that, of course, is another big news story. And then in the Catholic world, I would argue probably the biggest news story has been the Pope going after the traditional Latin Mass. I admit that I'm probably biased on this because I attend the traditional Latin Mass, but I think it goes far beyond the traditional Latin Mass itself, because I really think this impacts every faithful Catholic, whether you go to the Novus Ordo or the traditional Latin Mass. And we saw that actually come up just yesterday with Cardinal Supich in Chicago, basically saying you couldn't celebrate traditional Latin Mass on the first Sundays and other certain holy days. But he also said you can't celebrate the Novus Ordo ad orientem. And I think this is one of the main things against this whole idea of a reform of the reform, a reverent, we'll just have a reverent Novus Ordo and everything will be fine. No, that is not what they will allow you to have. What will happen is if they are successful in eliminating the traditional Latin Mass, then what they will do, at least allowable traditional Latin Mass, then what they will do is they will end up eliminating any aspects of tradition in the Novus Ordo Mass. They will not allow your traditionally celebrated Novus Ordo Mass. I mean, already Supich is saying he's not going to let it allow ad orientem. He is allowing Latin for now in the Novus Ordo. How nice of him. But ultimately, I think that this is a huge news story because it really shows that the focus of Rome, the focus of the Pope, is to eliminate any traditional views of Catholicism, any pre-conciliar ideas of Catholicism. Not that it's just that the idea that post-conciliar is better, but post-conciliar is only. That's the only thing that matters to these people. And so I think that's a huge news story that has a great impact beyond just traditional Latin Mass communities, but also in the entire Catholic Church. And of course, some of these things combined, for example, the COVID restrictions that happened in the world have impacted in the church as well, because you have all the mask mandates at parishes, you have all the different things that are going on at with vaccine passports. Even I mean, Marilyn in our comments mentioned the passport requirement for masses in Quebec, and I think Quebec also canceled. I think it was there that they canceled Christmas masses. And so what we see is bishops who are completely cowering to the state and allowing people to allowing government officials to determine who goes to mass and who doesn't go to mass and when you can have mass, which is just an affront to our faith. Okay, so those I think are the top news stories would be January 6th, President Biden, a supposed Catholic, receiving communion, the COVID, the whole madness surrounding COVID, and then also the restrictions on traditional Latin Mass. I know there's other stories that are important as well, but those are the ones that kind of came to mind when I was thinking of this. Now, I want to talk about now also Crisis Magazine in 2021. As I mentioned already, I took over the reins as editor-in-chief in January 4th, 2021, coming on my one-year anniversary. And it's been great. I've enjoyed it greatly. Hopefully people have enjoyed reading Crisis this year. Also, we a big deal for us at Crisis Publications, which is who owns Crisis Magazine, we acquired 1 Peter 5. And so I encourage people also to read that. That has a more traditional Catholic audience than Crisis Magazine does. But it's our sister publication, 1 Peter 5, under the editorship of Timothy Flanders. I think it's doing a great job. Well, a couple of things I wanted to note about Crisis Magazine this year. First of all, it was our top year for traffic at our website in 2021 ever. We topped I think our previous high was the year before, although I think maybe 2017 might have topped that. I can't remember now exactly. I just know that in 2021, we had our largest amount of traffic, both in users and in page views that we've ever had. So I want to thank everybody who has gone to Crisis Magazine this year, has shared our articles, let other people know about it. We've been fortunate so far that we have not been kicked off of big tech like Facebook or Twitter. Maybe that means we're not doing a good job. I don't know, because if you get kicked off, that usually means you're doing a good job. But I appreciate everybody who shares our articles on social media and with their friends and family members. Another thing I wanted to mention was in 2021, we had 140 different writers for Crisis. And I'm proud of that because we try to have a diverse number of writers. We don't just have the same people writing all the time. We have some of our great ones like Anthony Esselin or Jant Smith or Austin Ruse, people like that who write for us regularly. And we're going to continue to do that. But we had 150 different people write for us. And so I really appreciate that. And if anybody's interested in writing for us, we're always open. Just send a submission to submissions@crisismagazine.com. We'll be happy to look at it and consider it. If you're a good writer with a strong views of what's going on in the church and the world, we're happy to hear from you. So like I said, we have 140 different writers. A lot, I don't know how many, I forgot to look. A decent percentage of those were brand new to Crisis this year. Like I think I wouldn't be surprised if we had maybe 40 or 50 of those were brand new to Crisis that we just added to the team this year. So I'm really happy about that. Now, let me get some of the details of how we did, like what was most popular. First, what I want to do is cover the five most popular podcasts that we had this year. We started up the podcast. We had a podcast before I got on, but it kind of died out. So we rebooted it in February, and we had Dr. Scott Hahn come on in February, and we rebooted it. And we, from the beginning, we streamed it live on, I mean, not live, but we streamed it on YouTube, as well as on audio, on podcasts. And then in November, we added a bunch of other places, like I said, Odyssey, Facebook, Twitter, where we also go. But I think it was a good year. We have almost, I think it's like 3,800 subscribers on YouTube and subscribers in other places as well. And so I appreciate that. And what were the most popular podcasts? I'm going to go through this in backwards order. The top five podcasts. Let me find this. Okay. So number five, the fifth most popular podcast of the year was Why is Traditional Catholicism Booming? With Dr. Peter Kwasniewski. This was done back in March. And this was before, of course, Traditionis Custodis came out in July. And this was when everybody was talking about the fact that the traditional Latin Mass is really booming. And we talked about this with Dr. Kwasniewski, who is a writer for us. He's a writer for 1 Peter 5. He writes for Crisis Publications. And you know, he's written books for us. In fact, we're going to have him on again, the podcast, pretty soon. And we were basically just discussing. Now, I know in my own experience, there's a lot of reasons, but I do think COVID was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, the restrictions. I know a lot of people who stopped going to their Novus Ordo parish because they had such strong restrictions on wearing masks and other things, social distancing, receiving communion on the tongue, things like that they weren't allowing. And so a lot of people started going to traditional Latin Mass, which didn't have those restrictions locally, and they ended up loving it. And so we did a survey in July, right before the Motu Proprio came out, that talked about, that actually surveyed the growth. And it showed, I think it was 190% growth over the past 2 years at traditional Latin Mass parishes in America. So that's our that was our fifth most popular podcast, was Why is Traditional Catholicism Booming? Okay, our fourth most popular is Confessions of a Lefebvreist with Kennedy Hall. And this is a fun one. And then we got in a little trouble for this one because people didn't like us using the term Lefebvreist. And that is, for those who don't know, somebody who attends the Society of St. Pius X and has an affinity for Archbishop Lefebvre, who founded that society. And so Kennedy Hall, who's one of our most popular writers here and at 1 Peter 5, but especially here at Crisis, I interviewed him and I just wanted to talk to him. What's it like to go to a Society of St. Pius X chapel? And he talked about it, and it was a great conversation, and a lot of people really enjoyed that podcast. I was a little surprised because I thought that maybe this, you know, talking about the society it's kind of a small group of people that most people wouldn't really care. But like I said, it was our fourth most popular podcast. Okay, our third most popular is The Bishop Crisis with Dr. Janet Smith. This was one of our first podcasts, and this basically was just Dr. Smith just laying on the bishops and what they're not doing and doing wrongly. And so I know people are tired sometimes of bishop bashing, but Dr. Smith has a lot of respect in the Catholic world and it's well-deserved. And so when she speaks out like this, I think people want to listen, want to hear what she has to say. And so that was a very popular podcast, third most popular. Our second most popular was back in October, A Catholic in a Time of Crisis with Bishop Athanasius Schneider. This was great for me because I got to do this in person. I was with him in New Hampshire and I interviewed him one-on-one. And he talked about the whole COVID madness. He talked about the restrictions on the Latin Mass. We talked about a number of things. And I just personally, I just say it outright, he's my favorite bishop. I think he's got just a great way of looking at the world and at the church. He has a very calm, saintly, holy demeanor about him. And I think we can learn a lot by following his example and his words. And so I think, and also it was on that podcast that he inspired me to start up the Holy Faith Foundation, Holy Faith Foundation, which helps people give temporary financial assistance to people who've lost their job due to vaccine mandates. He suggested it was his idea completely. He said, what we need is a foundation that will help those who lose their job because of the vaccine mandates. And so we started that up back in November, about a month after this came out. And we've donated over $68,000, $68,000 to different Catholic families to help them temporarily. So that was in that interview right there. And that was the second most popular podcast that we had this year. Okay, so in the number one, should I have a drum roll or something like that? I don't know if you can hear this, but the drum roll of the most popular podcast of the year. And since we're on YouTube, this should not be a surprise who I was interviewing. That's right, Taylor Marshall. The Crisis in the Church and How to Respond with Taylor Marshall. We did this back in May. I've been on Taylor's show a number of times, and I always have a good time there. And so this time we reversed roles a little bit. It was a little bit weird actually having him on my show since I've been on his show a number of times, switching it up like that. But Taylor is a beast on YouTube. And so if you put him on your show, it's going to get a ton of traffic. And that's where because these, by the way, are traffic I got from this for both YouTube and on the audio podcast, but because he gets so much on the on YouTube, it just was ridiculous. Actually, our most popular podcasts on audio, not YouTube, are Scott Hahn ones, which didn't make the top five here because they don't get enough traffic on YouTube. But on our podcast, they were definitely our most popular. Were the two we had Dr. Scott Hahn on. But Taylor and I had a great time just talking about, in general, the crisis and how we can deal with it. I thought it was an enjoyable show. But that was our most popular podcast of 2021. I'm looking forward to next year and doing the podcast. We have some good things in plan for the podcast for next year, making a few changes to it. But I think it's going to be exciting. So that's the top five podcasts. Now, let's talk about the top 10 articles. Now, we publish at least 10 articles every single week at Crisis, and often more if we do one or two on Saturday. So if you think there's 50 weeks times 10, over 500, then another. Yeah. So we have a lot of articles on podcasts on Crisis Magazine, over 500 in a year. And these are the 10 most popular. Now I gauge this by traffic, by people who went to it, not by shares or likes or anything like that, but the number of people who actually viewed page views at the website. And so these are the 10 most popular ones that we had. The number 10, again, should I have a drum roll or something? The Devil and Facebook by Paul Kilgore. This was published back in February. And I'm going to have links to all these in the show notes. I haven't put them up yet because I didn't want to spoil the top 10. I'm going to put these in the show notes, links to all of them, so you can go back and read them. This was right in February, early February. So if you remember, January is when big tech really went into its censorious purge of all dissident voices. And, you know, after January 6th and all that. And so Paul was actually, he's a writer for Tan Books. He's written a book for Tan Books. And he's basically had some of his ads, Tan has had some of their ads that were blocked by Facebook. And so this was just an example of this happening. It also even had the example of, they had an ad for the Stations of the Cross, a Station of the Cross book that was blocked. And it was said because it was shocking, sensational, inflammatory, or excessively violent content. Well, yes, the crucifixion is shocking, sensationalistic, well, maybe not that, inflammatory and excessively violent, but it's also the reality of what we believe. And so this was our number 10 article. I think a lot of people were very interested in this idea of big tech. This was a big story time. By the way, I found that the most popular articles, typically they are, timing is a big thing. The author is sometimes a big deal, not as much as you might think, but really timing and how much people are thinking about it at the time. And that's what causes it to be popular. That was our number 10, most popular article. The ninth most popular article was actually written by me, The Beijing of Bishop Barron. And this one was because Bishop Barron, this was written back in March, Bishop Barron, whom I think we all know, he had written some inflammatory remarks about traditional Catholics. And I basically argued that he doesn't understand the traditional Catholic movement. He does not understand why people go to traditional Catholicism and what makes up the traditional Catholic movement. I think he still has this idea of, like, from the 1990s, that it's just a small group of people who are angry and bitter and things like that. But instead, it's really young people doing what he's claimed he wants, which is stop beiging, having a beige Catholicism. That's his term. That's where the title came from. This idea that we have this beige Catholicism that doesn't really proclaim the gospel, isn't really hardcore. And I'm like, that's what traditional Catholics, that's why they're going to the traditional Latin Mass. And I think Bishop Barron missed that point. And I think a lot of people agreed with me because this, like I said, is the most popular articles. The ninth most popular article we had this year was this, The Beijing of Bishop Barron. Okay, so the number eight most popular, let's move right along. Number eight most popular article is Joe Biden Eats and Drinks His Own Spiritual Death by Austin Ruse. If you look at the date, if you're watching, you can see it. If you're not, I have to tell you. The date of this is January 21st, 2021, i.e. the day after his, I think it was the day after his inauguration or day before. I can't remember. Right, or maybe the day of his inauguration. And Austin wrote, that one of our most regular writers for Crisis, he wrote this article basically saying that, quoting St. Paul, that when Joe Biden, who promotes abortion, receives communion, he's eating and drinking his own spiritual death. And I think the title of this article and the timing are really what made it so popular. I mean, it was obviously, we're not holding back anything on this one. We're going to make it very clear, Austin made very clear, that when Joe Biden receives communion, he is bringing spiritual death upon himself. And he can't, and we can't soften that or try to soft pedal that reality. In fact, that's the real scandal here, is the fact that priests and bishops who give him communion, they are not caring about his soul. Because if they cared and they loved him and he loved his soul, they would not give him communion. So that's the eighth most popular article was Joe Biden Eats and Drinks His Own Spiritual Death. The number seven most popular article, it was a little bit surprising to me, not that I didn't think it was a good article, but just the topic, it was, has Jordan Peterson finally found Christ? And this is by Kennedy Hall, who was, like I said, I think he was our third most popular podcast. He's also our seventh most popular article. He wrote, and this was basically Jordan Peterson. If you remember, he came to fame in 2016, 17. He skyrocketed, became a huge deal. And then he had some personal problems. I mean, I guess that's the best way to put it. So he's off the radar for a little bit, but then he came back this year. And some people noticed that his language, the way he talked about faith, the way he talked about religion, had changed a bit. And so a number of people were speculating that perhaps he had become Christian, maybe even Catholic. And this is what Kennedy was writing about in this article from back in March, as Jordan Peterson finally found Christ, was the idea of, okay, maybe he has, and saying that would be a great thing. Now, as of right now, I don't think Jordan Peterson, even today in December 2021, has publicly said he's Christian. Correct me if I'm wrong, anybody out there, but I don't think he has. But obviously, we're praying for this because we pray for anybody to become Catholic. And so hopefully that's the case with him. And so Kennedy's article on this was very good and it was very popular. People wanted to know because he's a well-known figure. And so obviously, if he became Christian, that would be a big deal. Obviously, even better if he became Catholic. Okay, now I'm going to move into the sixth most popular article. And there's going to be a theme you're going to notice in the next five of the next six articles. And this is by Dr. Janet Smith back in September, The Fake Theology Behind Vaccine Mandates. And this was a great article by Dr. Smith. It was very comprehensive, very detailed. And what she did was, she was one of our most popular podcasts as well. But she basically detailed the arguments Catholics were making. I think National Catholic Reporter, so not actually Catholics, were making arguments for vaccine mandates from a Catholic perspective. And even though the Vatican themselves, who are very pro-vaccine, have said that you can't mandate it, a lot of people are saying that it was within Catholic moral theology to mandate the vaccine. Well, Dr. Smith, who is one of the premier Catholic moral theologians today, one of our best, if not the best Catholic moral theologian we have today, she took that apart. She just decimated that argument and said, no, you cannot have vaccine mandates, morally speaking. There's no moral case for vaccine mandates. In fact, it would be immoral to impose vaccine mandates. And so she goes through and just obliterates it. And this is a great article that just obliterates the idea that vaccine mandates are moral from a Catholic perspective. This is back in September when vaccine mandates were really kicking into high gear. So you can see why this would be a popular article. Okay, so now we're in the top five articles. Okay, number five, resisting abortion-tainted vaccines in the culture of death. Do you see a theme here? Again, we're back to vaccines, the COVID vaccines. And here, Bishop Athanasius Schneider, back in April, wrote a very strong article arguing that taking the vaccine is immoral. Taking the abortion-tainted vaccines is immoral, period, full stop, end of story. And this is not the view of lots of people. In fact, Dr. Janet Smith, she does allow that they can be taken in certain situations. They can never be forced, but they can be taken. A lot of people take that. Bishop Schneider says, no, they cannot be taken. It would be immoral to take them. And you should read his arguments here in this article from April. And this is, like I said, our fifth most popular article. And also his article that he wrote another article similar to this right before I started in December of 2020, that was also very popular. And I think at Crisis, we want to run multiple points of view that are within the Catholic spectrum, so to speak. We're not going to let heretics run wild or anything like that, but we are allowing debate. So the fact that Bishop Schneider thinks that these abortion-tainted vaccines are always and everywhere immoral, but Dr. Smith would not think that, we're going to run both of them. We're going to allow for that debate and discussion because I think that's very important that we talk about it and have those debates within there. That was our fifth most popular article was Resisting Abortion-Tainted Vaccines in the Culture of Death by Bishop Athanasius Schneider. Okay, number four. Okay, I'm going to smile at number four. You'll see why. Stop pretending the COVID jab is morally equivalent to other meds. The reason I'm smiling is because the author is Suzanne Sammons. And for those who don't know, it should be clear that is my wife. I was a little bit uncomfortable when I first started at Crisis. Now, my wife has written for Crisis before I became the editor on her own merits. She's written for 1 Peter 5 as well in her own merits. And so when she wanted to write something for Crisis, I was a little bit unsure, like, was that going to look like favoritism? Should I do that? But I'm like, well, she's written for us for Crisis before. You know, she can stand on her merits. And sure enough, she wrote the fourth most popular, put it on the screen, the fourth most popular article of the entire year for Crisis Magazine. And in this, what she does is, there's a certain priest who some people don't want to name, but I will, Father Matthew Schneider, LC, who has been a cheerleader for these abortion-tainted vaccines. I mean, he's basically pushing them as much as he can. He's like a used car salesman, just pushing it back and forth anywhere he can. And one of the arguments he made was back in, I think, January, was that basically every medicine is tainted with abortion somehow. And so why we should just throw up our hands and just say, okay, since they're all tainted by abortion, we're not going to care, and we're just going to take them all anyway. Well, my wife was not happy with that, and so she wrote this article basically showing in this article, there's a lot of problems with Schneider's arguments. In fact, my wife has another article, I think, in the works that she's going to decimate some more of his arguments. But basically, he was claiming things like Tylenol and ibuprofen and these common medications are also tainted by abortion. And so what my wife did in this article, she tore that apart and just said, no, that's not how it works. Tylenol, for example, was invented before the abortions took place, that this could happen. And so obviously it's not tainted in the same way. And in fact, it's not tainted really. And so she describes that. And this was very popular, this article. It was shared far and wide. It might have been our most shared article. But yes, we got a lot of traffic on this one. And I think it's good, because I think what it did was I heard from a lot of people who said they were very disturbed by Father Schneider's article, where he talks about that basically everything is tainted by abortion, so we can take anything. And they're very disturbed by that, but they didn't know why. They couldn't put their finger on it. And so what Suzanne's article did was it put the finger on it, so to speak, and showed that, no, it's not true that Tylenol and these other common medications are tainted with abortion the same way that the COVID vaccines are. Typically, just a real brief, in case you're not sure what I mean by that, often what happens is that an existing medication, they will test it later for other uses using abortion-tainted means. And that's awful, and that we should condemn that, and we should work against that. But that's not the same as something coming to existence because of testing or development using aborted fetal cells, which is what the COVID vaccines do. So this was our fourth most popular article in crisis this year, was this. Okay. Now let's go to number three. Number three. This is, by the way, number three is The Tale of Two Father Jameses by Father Dwight Longenecker back in May, about Father James Altman and Father James Martin. This was five of our top six most popular articles were about the COVID vaccine. I'm giving a little spoiler of the top two, but the COVID vaccine. And this was the only one that wasn't, because this was at the height of the Father James Altman phenomenon. I'm not trying to dismiss that or try to denigrate him in any way. I'm just saying this is when everybody was talking about Father Altman. And this is right after his bishop disciplined him. And Father Longenecker, he basically wrote an article saying that he's comparing the treatment by the Church of Father James Altman with the treatment by the Church of Father James Martin, and showing how hypocritical it is that church officials were very quick to condemn Father Altman, but they will allow Father Martin to go on and do all his heretical stuff with no problems. And so I really feel like this was an important article, and I'm glad Father Longenecker wrote it. And this was, like I said, our third most popular article, because it really, I think it touched upon a major problem in the church, and that's the focus of our leaders and what they focus on. They're focused on, like I said in one article, they're focused more on COVID protocols than they are liturgical protocols. They're focused more on the problems of Father James Altman than they are on the problems of Father James Martin. They have this, they care more about the traditional Latin Mass even existing than they do about the existence of abuses in the Novus Ordo Mass that are widespread. So I feel like this article, it resonated with a lot of people, because it showed the hypocrisy going on in the church today among her leaders, unfortunately. That was the third most popular article. The second most popular article actually was written by me. Are Catholics eligible for COVID vaccine religious exemptions? This was written back in August. First, I want to note, this is embarrassing. I was almost sad that this became so popular, because there is a problem. As an editor, this killed me. The image I used was from Shutterstock. I just used this thing where it has this, if people can't see it, has a needle and a little vial, and it says in Scrabble letters, religious exemption. However, the word religious is misspelled. And after I posted it, I didn't realize it till later, and it got really popular. So everybody can just see, I wasn't doing a very good job as an editor on my own article there, picking my own image. But the reason this article, I think, was so popular, the number two article of the entire year, is because this was right when the vaccine mandates and religious exemptions really came to the fore. This is early August. And so basically a lot of people were wanting to ask their priest or their bishop for a religious exemption to the mandates. And this was a new thing that's just started. And New York, the diocese in New York, Archdiocese of New York, had argued that priests are not allowed to give this out, are not allowed to give religious exemptions out. So I use that as a touching point to then write about the fact that no, Catholic priests, no matter what they think about the vaccine, should be willing to give out religious exemptions, because the church herself has made it very clear that it can never be mandatory to force a vaccine on people. And so that was one of the first articles, I think, out there that really argued that religious exemptions are definitely viable for Catholics. Now, I even said at the time, I think that I don't think that religious vaccines, religious exemptions are a permanent solution. I actually think that they're just a temporary solution. We're already seeing that because some companies are rejecting religious exemptions now and instead are just saying that you have to get the vaccine. So, but I do think it was important to establish that point, and we did that back in August, that yes, Catholics should be given religious exemptions for the vaccine, because the church teaches very clearly that you cannot be forced to get the vaccine. It doesn't matter if the Pope likes the vaccine or thinks that people should get it. He can't say that people have to get it. And that's the big point that we're making there. So that was the second most popular article of the year, was that one by me on Catholic eligibility for COVID religious exemptions. Okay, so now the number one most popular article, and this was not even close. This one blew away my article, which was number two, blew away everything else. This was shared far and wide. This was definitely very popular, and you should know what the topic is. Yes, it is Catholic Conscience and the COVID-19 Vaccine by Anna Maria Cardinale. I hope I pronounced your name right, Anna Maria. Anna Maria Cardinale. I think the reason this was so popular is for two reasons. One is because of the timing. If you note, this was published January 19th, 2021. The COVID vaccine had only been out for a month. It wasn't even available to most people. For example, my age group couldn't even get it until, like, I think 2 months later, and younger people even longer than that. And so this was like a shot across the bow in my mind that Anna Maria gave us with this article, because that's the first reason, the timing. People were like, this is new. What should we think about this? We know it's tainted by abortion. What should we think? But you know what else I think is what made it so popular is she details in there very closely, with direct language, what it means when we say something is abortion tainted. I think, unfortunately, terms that are used a lot, like abortion tainted, I think that's probably the best term, but even it can desensitize our conscience to what's actually going on. And she details that we're talking about a human being that was killed and then used for medical experimentation. And I think that needs to be said very clearly and bluntly. I don't think we can hide from that. And I think that's what she did. And that became our most popular article by, you know, quite some margin. And so, like I said, this is our number one article. And if you notice, again, five of our top six articles were about the COVID vaccine. And I think that reflects the fact that Catholics really wanted to know, what should we do about this fact that this vaccine that people are saying is going to save the world, although we already know now that's the joke to even think that, but that are pushing upon all us, mandating it. You can't go in the restaurants. You can't work at certain jobs. You can't do, you know, all these different things if you don't have this vaccine, but it's tainted by abortion. In other words, we have it because of, through either development or testing, because a baby was killed and we experimented on her. And I think that is a tragedy. And I think we have to always remember that. And so Catholics really wanted to talk about that, really wanted to understand this issue a lot more. And so that's our top 10. Like I said, I'll put links in the show notes. Like I said, five of our top six were on the COVID vaccine. We had a couple other good articles as well there. We also had a lot of great articles that did very well, but might not have cracked the top 10. With over 500 articles, it's hard to crack the top 10. I'm kind of going long, but that's okay. It's the last podcast of the year. I'll go long this time. I also want to make a couple quick predictions for 2022. And I think this is where we get to laugh at me in a year, because anybody who makes predictions knows they never come true. Something always different. Like I said, somewhere else, if you try to make a prediction of what 2020 would have been like at the beginning of 2020, you've been so far wrong. And so it's very difficult to make these predictions. So we'll go ahead and do that anyway. I think one thing that we're hearing more and more, and I think it's just a reality, is I think there's a decent chance that Pope Francis will not live to see the end of 2022. There's rumors that are very coming from a lot of directions that he has cancer and that he doesn't have much longer to live. Now, I personally don't always take stock in these rumors. Might be true, might not be. But here's the thing. An 85-year-old man, most 85-year-old men alive today, or at least a lot of them, won't see the end of 2022. It just that's the reality of that, at that age. And so what could happen if the Pope dies next year? I think we're going to just have a conclave craziness. I mean, it's going to be crazy, because I personally think that the Cardinals, maybe it's just wishful thinking, I personally think the Cardinals do not want another revolutionary to follow Pope Francis immediately. I think they want a time to pause and kind of take their breath instead of the revolutionary we have now in the papal office. So, but we'll see. So I think that's a big story. I think also the same thing is true about Biden. I think there's a decent chance Biden doesn't survive 2022. I mean, he's not in good health either, I don't think, no matter what the Pravda-like messaging that the White House gives. And so that could be a situation. I mean, I think they'll pull a weekend at Bernie's on him as long as they can. But if he passes away this year and Kamala's put in charge, oh my gosh, I don't know what that means. So I think that's very, that's also a possibility. But I think the big story of 2022 will almost definitely be COVID still, because we haven't gotten our fill of it yet. I guess I'm just an optimist. I think though, there's the pushback has begun, and I think the pushback will continue in 2022. I think that the lies that have been told to us over and over again, like the lie, if you get the vaccine, you can't get the virus. Remember, we were told that initially. The lie that, okay, if you just get two shots and you'll be fully vaccinated, now you need the booster, then you need another one. The lie that if people get vaccinated, they don't have to wear a mask. All these things, people are tired of them. So even people who got vaccinated, I think they're starting to see that, wait a second, this isn't really helping any. Things have not changed in society, even if we get vaccinated. So I think that, I think that I'm hopeful that in 2022, we'll see a pushback, a stronger pushback, where people will finally just start saying, forget it. I'm not abiding by these stupid rules and regulations. We're just going to go do what we need to do, in our lives. And we're going to treat COVID like it should have been treated from the beginning, which is just a serious flu, but nothing more. And so hopefully that's going to happen. Okay, so to wrap it up, let me just state that I'm excited about 2022 for crisis. I think we're going to have a good year. Hopefully, we'll have our best year ever after this year was our best year ever. Our hope is, my hope, and I'm saying this publicly so you can hold me to it, I really hope we redesign the website this year. The website was first created in 2014, almost 8 years ago now, in which time it was a very good website, but it is dated. We can't do a lot of things we want to do. So hopefully we have a redesigned website this year. We're going to have a new setup, I think, soon with the podcast. I won't tell you more about that. We're hoping to maybe do some more news rather than just commentary at the site. But all these things we're hoping to, and this and more, we're hoping to add to the podcast. To Crisis Magazine, our offerings this year. I hope you'll stay with us, and I hope we can work together through the crisis that's occurring in the church and in the world. And let's pray for each other. Please pray for Crisis Magazine. We won't turn down donations either. Go to crisismagazine.com/donate, or oh my gosh, I can't remember the URL. Go to crisismagazine.com and click on the donate link. How about that? Donate if you can, but even if you can't, please pray for us. And just know that at Crisis, we're praying for our readers, and we really hope that that we all make it to heaven. I mean, because that's really what it's all about. So until next time, until next year, God love you.